Okay, well, good morning. I was just thinking of everybody who was walking here, how happy it makes me to see everybody in one place. It was just kind of a little heart thing that happened. So today we are going to be talking about the speech precepts. But before we do that, because this is the last of our talks on the precepts, I thought I would just kind of give a quick summary of things that popped out to me during the other talks that we heard, just to kind of remind us where we've been. I mean, we have covered a lot of ground this week, whether we realize it or not, and some very deep kinds of things have come up. After that, I'll just do a kind of an overview of the speech precepts and the kind of using some of Sangharacharya's thoughts as well. And then we'll look at the precepts individually. And then at the end, I would just like to talk for just a minute or two about exemplification. And I'll say a little bit more about that later. So anyway, when I was just thinking about this talk, I wanted to go back and see what the other people had talked about and where we would be in relation to that. And so I looked at each of the talks, my notes about it, and some of the things that kind of jumped out at me. For example, in Karuna Devi's talk, she talked about vision and transformation quite eloquently about the path of ethics and its relationship to that. She talked a fair amount about the importance of metta in this whole process of looking at ourselves in relation to the precepts. And she introduced us to the confession piece, you know, a pretty powerful piece of what we do. So those were the things that kind of jumped out at me. She reminded us, of course, that the precepts are training principles which lead to a deeper understanding of ourselves and our mental states and actions. And then Vimalasara, in her really evocative talk, introduced us to the mind principles. And she talked about the power of reciting the precepts daily and what an impact that might have on us if we really took that up as a practice. And for me, it was interesting to hear her emphasize the importance of stating the negative precepts as well as the positive, really looking into what those ask of us. She also reminded us that we're not going to refuge to the precepts, but rather to the three jewels, and that was an important little insight for me to think about. And then I liked her phrase that we are a collection of habits. And
Pat-based, right?
And sometimes wrong views, and it takes effort to change ourselves in that regard. And I think it was she that said, or maybe, I don't know which one of you said it for sure, but I think it was you, Vimalasari, who said, as we become more spiritually developed, we become safer to be there.
You didn't quote
anything. That was a quote from
yes.
The
Great Oh, was that the big
yeah.
Okay. So. And then Tara Prabha really very nicely introduced the body precepts. talking about non-harming, abstaining from killing, and metta being the foundation of our actions all the time. She talked about abstaining from taking the not given, and really emphasized generosity as one of the primary things that we need to take away from those and the ways in which we manifest generosity in our lives. And then when she was talking about the sexual misconduct you know, really focusing on just how we view ourselves as human beings, how we either respect or don't respect ourselves. Yeah, and then talked a little bit about gratitude and its importance in our work, in our, the work that we're doing. So those were just some of the things. That certainly wasn't all that came up for me, but I thought it was those talks gave such a good foundation and reminded me of some things that have kind of gone underground a little bit. Appreciating that from all of you. So I'm going to turn now a little bit to just kind of an overview of the speech precepts. So as we know, in Buddhism, the speech is a very important and significant idea that we have to take really seriously. The fact that there are four speech precepts is pretty telling about where emphasis may be. I like to think about, when I'm thinking about this, well, all the precepts, but the actions that we take, body, speech, mind, where we kind of touch into the psychic energy of the chakras as we do that. And interestingly to me, anyway, the chakra associated with speech in tantric Buddhism is red in color, kind of red like fire in color, that energy is. And so when we think about that, we could think, or we do, or I do sometimes, think about fire. And fire can illuminate. It can illuminate. It can warm. It can light our way. It can provide clarity in darkness. It can also burn, and it can also scar. It can also kill. So just as we treat fire with a great deal of respect and care, and we need to do the same with our speech, because it is has both elements to it, both positive and negative. So we need to really develop our speech in the same way that, and be skillful with it in the same way that we sometimes are very careful with fire. We need to prepare sometimes for whatever it is that we're going to say. We need to tend our tendencies with speech. We need to replenish and refill and relearn some things about our speech. And the image that I sometimes have about speech in my own mind, just like it's a cascade that comes down, all these pieces of it, the kindly speech, the gracious speech, harmonious speech. But I like the image of it ending in silence, like in a silent pool, as Sangharacharya talks about. When we really work with that, eventually we become quieter, and silence is a piece of that. So, in living ethically, there is a piece in the introduction about the Sangra, if I can say this word, Sangra Havastus.
Sangra Havastus.
I always have trouble with that word. So, and Sangharacharya talks a lot about this, the four means of unifying. The Sangha, or groups of people, how do you bring people together? The way the Bodhisattva brings people together to create a Buddha land. And the first of these is generosity, which I think that Tara Prabha talked about in some depth, and I think maybe that was part of the reason that she did that. It is a really important piece. The second is affectionate speech. And we'll be talking a bit about that in a minute. The third is beneficial activity, and I think almost all of our talks have kind of included an element of that. That's why we're doing this hard work, isn't it, to bring into the world beneficial activity. And the fourth is exemplification. In other words, practicing what one preaches. And I'll be saying a little bit more about that in a minute. So turning to the precepts themselves, as we know, there are four of them. And so I'm just going to briefly go through a few things about them individually. So precept number four, I undertake the item of training which consists in abstention from false speech and with truthful communication, I purify my speech. So truthful speech is important primarily because it's the principal vehicle of communication between humans. And if that speech is not truthful, there really can be no spiritual life or spiritual community. Whatever that life or community would be built on would be a falsehood and therefore not stable, not lasting. Sangharakshita said, he has some very strong statements about this. He says, bearing false witness, particularly in a court of law, undermines the foundation of society. Many or most societies see truthfulness as a supreme virtue. And then he says further, anyone who tells lies and who does not recognize the existence of a higher world of morals and spiritual values is capable of breaking every other precept. That's pretty strong. So how can we cultivate truthfulness? What are some of the actual things that we can take on and do to begin this process? And although it seems like a really simple principle, truthfulness, you know, of course we're going to be truthful, but the more you read about it, the more you see the subtleties of trying to speak truthfully. There's a poem I used to love called There's No Such Thing as a True Story. And the reason being that there are so many sides to everything, and we never really know for sure. So it isn't easy. It's a difficult task. But one of the things that we can do is really cultivate factual accuracy. Sangharakshita talks about scrupulous fidelity to facts. And I know in my own life, sometimes I just say things, you know, and I probably think that they're true, but I haven't delved into them a lot. My husband has taught me a lot about that because he'll go, yes, I don't get that. Say more about that, you know, so I've learned to, if I'm going to say something, I usually, you know, kind of think about it a little bit, particularly if it's a topic of conversation with my husband, and it's important. But so factual accuracy and not exaggerating or minimizing, which is also very easy to do. And also, if we're telling or talking about a situation, you know, there may be the words, there may be the story, but we need to include, if it's a really important encounter that we're recalling or recounting, the relevant circumstances surrounding that. What else was going on besides that particular thing that happened? Was that person anxious, or were they depressed, or was there something else going on? I mean, really making the story complete if we're going to tell it at all. So, carelessness with factual accuracy can be really a source of confusion and serious misunderstandings. And I think probably we've all experienced that at one time or another. We need to be really scrupulously careful in repeating what someone else has said. And it needs to be conveyed in such a way that conveys not only the letter of the utterance, but also what was the spirit of it, in what spirit was it stated. The Sangharakshita talks about when we speak the truth, we expect people to believe us. And he also says, when other people speak the truth, we should believe them, that that's an important piece of our practice. So, kind of an interesting thing that he's pointed out there, that we need to take them seriously. So, working with truthful speech, we just need to realize that if we're not honest, we can't really live a spiritual life. But we need to speak our own truth. And that involves honesty and sincerity. We need to say what is really in our hearts and minds rather than holding back. And we must come to understand better what we feel, think, and what our motivation is. Because sometimes we just blather something and we really don't know from where are we really speaking. So we need to live our own truth, be accurate with our speech. And some people have suggested even writing, particularly if it's a difficult kind of thing to come to grips with, writing it down and processing it in writing so that you can see the elements. Those are just some ideas then about truthful speech. So then the fifth precept is abstaining from harsh speech and then kindly and gracious speech. So Sangharakshita says, with regard to the negative form of the fifth precept, it is necessary to abstain not only from harsh speech in its cruder forms, but also from indulgences in coarse, indecent, and obscene language of every kind, which is everywhere today. It was really interesting to me to hear him say that he had never used harsh speech unless he, in a couple instances, he was recounting something that was said. I was having a really hard time thinking, wow, what would that be like? I'll just tell the quicker side, but when I was a little Catholic girl, they told us whenever somebody said the name of Jesus, we were supposed to bow our head and say, blessed be the name of Jesus. And I thought it was, in my household, I was kind of doing a lot of this. So. But it is that. I'm just thinking about that as we're talking. with regard to that, examples of harsh speech, of course, are anger, irritation, blaming. I've heard some of this come up in various of our talks. Complaining, condescending, backbiting, and talking at people. So, yeah. The other thing is we can have a really harsh inner voice, both towards ourselves and towards others, whatever comes up. I think we had, Helen gave a really nice example of that, how that works. So another thing that comes up is just this speaking harshly or yelling at children. And that's a really, I think that's a really important one. Maybe some of you can remember that happening to you as children and how that I think of, I always think of Suvarna Prabhuji, this picture of herself inside of a washing machine, curled up in a little ball, I think trying to get away from some things that were going on with her. And that image has just stuck with me. So, yeah. So poor, not using eye contact, and we've all gone through those eyes, those staring into one another's eyes, which I always have a hard time with, but really good practice to look people in the eye when we speak. Passing our negativities on to others is important to look at, and negating the being or energies of others. So harsh speech poisons the atmosphere, while kindly speech can purify and invigorate it. Truth-telling, one of the things somebody said to me once, truth-telling is not about, not something that we dump on somebody, that this is the truth. It's not something we, if we're particularly about them. You know, it isn't something that we dump on them. We do that gently. And when we need to speak the truth or to somebody, or maybe give some unpleasant, something that's a little uncomfortable, really planning that a little bit and thinking how we would do that. And I'll just finish this precept with this little thing on admonishing others from the Vinaya Pitaka, which says, one who is about to admonish another must realize within herself five qualities before doing so. She must intend thus. In due season will I speak, not out of season. In truth will I speak, not in falsehood. Gently will I speak, not harshly. To one's profit may I speak, not to one's loss. With kindly intent, I will speak, not in anger. And I have copies of that quote that I'll leave out for you if you want. I have it hanging on my refrigerator. So, okay. So, moving on to precept number six. I undertake the item of training which consists of abstention from frivolous speech or the cultivation of meaningful speech. And so, Sangharacitta says speech can only be truly meaningful if our lives are meaningful, mm-hmm. if we have something to bring to that. And he also points out, and rightly so, that frivolous speech abounds, and how much of our life is given over to taking part in frivolous speech. Certainly with the advent of cell phones and computers and horrendous numbers of emails and things like that. I was thinking one day, as I was removing emails, I timed myself to see how long it took me just to do that. And I thought, I really do not want to be spending my life energy in this way. Mm-hmm. And so I looked into ways to speed that up. But it eats at your time. Okay, so let's see. So meaningful speech, according to Sangharacitta, is not speech about the Dharma in any particular sense. It is communication in depth between two or more people who are committed to the ideal of enlightenment and have gone for refuge. He also says that it's not necessary to drag the subject of the Buddha into every conversation that we have. So there is a middle way there as well. So He says that our commitment to enlightenment will reveal itself naturally in the course of our conversation, and one speech will therefore become meaningful. So even in mundane things and the way we live our everyday life, it becomes apparent what we are worthy. So we need to watch ourselves a bit with this, so that we're not engaging too much in frivolous speech. Sometimes you can almost feel when you just are starting to get really bored with a conversation, and maybe that's the time to stop and look at what has your part been in that, and how could that maybe change a bit. So, yeah. So we need to watch ourselves and not engage so much in that. But sometimes the use of humor is a really good thing, although we have to be... Teasing can be a good thing, but we have to be cognizant of the effect that might have on another person. But speech about mundane events is how sometimes we connect with each other. So just being aware as we... carry out that. Okay. And so the seventh precept is to undertake the item or training which consists in abstention of slanderous speech or cultivation of harmonious speech. And again, Sangharacharya writes very seriously about this precept. He says the seventh precept, malicious speech, is malicious in a special way. Malicious is enmity of heart, hatred, or ill will, and malicious speech in the most general sense is speech that proceeds from unskillful mental states. He also said malicious speech is speech which brings about and is intended to bring about disunity, discord, and enmity. So pretty strong, and he reminds us that we can really get into the harming precepts in this way too. In its positive form, creating harmony, that often requires great skill, and I think most of us understand that. How do we, when something has gone awry in our sangha or in our families or among our friends, how hard that is and what skill is needed to bring those various kinds of issues in a kindly way into people's consciousness so that they can work them out. And often there's residual from that that can last a long time. The Buddha says one who observes this precept, when she hears something at one place, she does not proclaim it elsewhere. What she has heard here, she does not report there to bring about a quarrel between the parties. And so quarrels and disunity often begin when a third party, Sangharacharya says deliberately, but I think it could also just be very unskillfully, brings up trouble by telling a third party what somebody else has said about them. So, yeah. So that's an important thing to really, really be cautious about what we say about other people and how we say it and in what form. Bringing about harmony heals rifts between people. I've had experience with Dhammarati in this regard, and respect his ability to somehow make that happen. He's very, very skilled. And when harmony is present, it creates deeper and deeper harmony and can lead really to deep self-transcendence, leaving the self behind, and it brings together discordant parts. And there's a quality of mudita there, delighting in harmony. When talking about other people is done with mutual respect and it should be done with mutual respect and concern rather than with grumbling or criticizing. And then to find somebody, one of the techniques, if you have an issue like that, would be to find somebody impartial to help you process that, who's not on one side or the other. So careful about that. Sadhguru also talks about our practice of rejoicing in merits as a remedy for some of this. And I think it needs not just to be done in, you know, in a formal puja. And I think you were talking about that the other day, Nora, about how you'd like to see us do that more readily and easily. Okay, so that's the precepts. And just a couple fewer... thoughts about this concept of exemplification, or really embodying the practices, and learning to practice what one preaches. So the Dharma is a teaching that has to be realized in our daily life. It has to be embodied. And it is this way, I really think, that in which it is truly communicated. So we have, you know, I think just how we embody the precepts or how we embody our aspirations is really important and plays out, communicates itself to other people. When I was taking communication courses in nursing school, one of the things the communication course said is human beings cannot not communicate. So they have to communicate, and whether they're actually speaking or not, they're still communicating. You know, our nonverbal communication tells a lot about who we are and what we are. So we have to kind of watch how we are wandering around in the world, because we are communicating different things, and if it is positive, the world will notice. So just needing to... exemplify things, and how are we doing in that regard? Asking the question, how am I doing that? What form does it take? How do I see anything in myself that tells me I'm on the right track? And is there a discrepancy between the way we are and the way that we aspire to be? Yeah. Oh no. And Sakaracharya says, what is lacking is not so much the ability to be other than we are at present, but the courage to be honest about where we stand. So the honesty issue is really big. The Bodhisattva is the living embodiment of all the qualities she finds, all the qualities that she encourages other people to develop. She inspires people to lead a spiritual life because she herself is inspired to do so. So the difficulty arises for those of us who are still trying to become bodhisattvas, and we may have a vision of the ideal, a vision of spiritual perfection, but we cannot live up to it sometimes. So we may sincerely believe in it, and we may be inspired by it, but we find it difficult to transform our lives in accordance with it. Sadhguru says we come up against the well-known divide between the path of vision and the path of transformation. But he says further, really, it doesn't. This doesn't need to prevent us from trying to communicate that vision through body, speech, and mind. You know, all we really have to communicate is ourselves, authentically, truly communicate our truth in whatever form that might take. So I think I'm going to end there. I would just like to say in closing that this week we have set ourselves firmly on the path and have covered an awful lot of ground together. And probably in the weeks following the retreat, we'll begin to see that taking form in a different way. So we can in any way hope that that will be the case. So leaving here, we will be taking into the world a much-needed view of kindly, truthful, patient speech and love. So let us continue to give light to one another. Mm-hmm.